Welcome back to Hitch Route. Week 2 of the 2022 NFL season is officially in the books. I'm Rob. He's Alex. We're so glad to have you in today. Alex, I am realizing a little trendy trend so far in this NFL season.
Oh yeah, Rob, what's the trendy trend?
The trendy trend, Alex, is that teams can no longer hold leads by virtue of changing dynamics within the game, and specifically at position groups.
I feel like this is 97% inspired by Dolphins-Ravens. Am I wrong?
About 96%, so yeah. But hey, I mean, like, I really started to think about it because, like, it was a recurring theme throughout this Sunday's games, I feel. One team getting out to a massive lead in the first half before either surrendering or almost surrendering it to close out the second. And I think I may have discovered the reason why that is.
Okay. I'm listening because I'm not – I can see the correlation, but I don't see the causation myself.
I believe that we have reached a point in the NFL where there are more great receivers than there are great corners. And I believe this has been facilitated by high school and college athletes, or rather the best high school and college athletes, overwhelmingly opting to play receiver or quarterback as opposed to, you know, running back or cornerback or one of the other positions. And I think what you're now starting to see is that teams just have more great receivers than their opponents have great corners. So if they get down really big late in games and they literally unleash their offense on the other team, it's literally almost an inevitability, unless that team, which is on the receiving end, has a good enough pass rush to disrupt that, or if they have a good enough running game to keep the other's offense off the field. And as we saw, I think there are plenty of teams in the league that have neither of those in order to prevent the epic comeback from happening or almost happening.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I definitely think, in general, rules prefer offense and recruiting. It definitely makes sense that people always go to offense first because people want to be stars. And,
right.
You know, defensive players get their flowers when it is what it is. But no one really grows up and says, I want to be Aaron Donald. Despite being as cool of a name as it is, people more likely than not want to be Justin Herbert or Cooper Kupp, or I'm not going to name more names. The point is that I think you have a good theory. I also just think that the rules in general prefer the offense, like I said, which is why it makes it easier. But yeah, at the end of the day, corner is a hard position to play. Even if you're a great corner, you're going to get beat.
Right.
Jalen Ramsey got beat a lot during the Super Bowl even. Stephon Diggs has his number, but he's still like an amazing corner. But you just can't lock down the field every time. And
no.
You just need one broken coverage and boom, there you can have a touchdown. I think we saw a few broken coverages in plenty of games this week, but let's just head into the slate, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right, so Thursday Night Football, we're not going to dig into it, but it was a phenomenal game, Chargers-Chiefs. Chiefs came out with the win. I think Mahomes threw several passes that should have been intercepted, 4 by some count, and it didn't land in the hands of DBs because the people that can catch balls are recruited into offense in high school and before then, and that's why guys play defense, and maybe that goes to show our theory more. But Chargers look good still. Herbert took a shot to the ribs, and hopefully he's okay. And, you know, things have to look up for both teams. They're both part of an amazing division that looks to continue to excite us for years.
Yeah, very much agree. You know, very much lived up to the hype. It almost felt like one team controlled the first half and the other took over in the second. But all in all, a really nice display by both teams. Herbert is unbelievably tough, and I can't wait for the next matchup later this season. I hope it is just as exciting as that one. So, moving on then to Dolphins at Ravens. Wow. That's all I was left saying to myself as I watched the purple team collapse in historic fashion before my own eyes through my TV set on Sunday. That was really bad. Like, that was really, really bad. And, like, you know, as we were saying to open the show, like, we know this is going to happen in today's game. We know you're not going to keep a 21-point lead, you know, for long, right? Or at least most teams are not going to keep a 21-point lead for long.
Yeah, I was going to say the Buffalo Bills might be the one team that...
Yes, yes. There will always be some teams whose pass rushes are dominant enough and or whose running games are stout enough such that they will be able to keep the opposing team off the field and limit their opportunities to make the comeback. The Ravens are not currently one of those teams. And I think the game really illustrated exactly what their problem is to a level of clarity we did not have before this game, which is their pass rush is non-existent. Before, their running game was powerful enough with Ronnie Stanley at left tackle and then J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards at running back such that they could literally salt away games in the fourth when they were up by, you know, several scores. And, you know, we never got to see what might happen if the other team might potentially go on a run late, because they didn't get to go on a run late because they couldn't get on the field. Once that running game went down for us, given, you know, obviously Stanley has not been on the field since week one of last season, nor have J.K. Dobbins or Gus Edwards seen the field since two seasons ago, with their running game non-existent and their pass rush no better, quite frankly, they can't get teams off the field. And by extension, their cornerback depth is atrocious. At least it's atrocious now because they're all rookies. And they didn't have an answer for the combination of Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. And we saw that unfold. You know, just a really unfortunate turn of events if you're them. But, you know, at the same time, I think the Ravens have to feel good about the fact that they're getting Stanley back hopefully soon, along with Dobbins and Edwards, to shore up the running game. And then, you know, hopefully Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters can play more snaps in the secondary, because we all know they weren't out there quite enough, because if they had been out there enough, I seriously doubt they would have given up four scores in the fourth quarter.
Wait, Humphrey played this week? I thought I missed him. I thought he wasn't there.
Oh, no. Oh, yes. He was not in the second half. He was not out there once the halftime break was over. Yeah, for whatever reason, I don't know if he was dealing with a lingering injury or something, but he did not see the field very much in the second half. Marcus Peters barely saw the field at all game. I mean, they basically had him on a pitch count because he was back in action for the first time since the Ravens' playoff loss to the Bills two seasons ago. Because he missed all of last season and only just now, you know, rejoined the party. So again, a really unfortunate set of events if you're the Ravens. I don't think it's reflective of how their season is going to go, because they're going to get these guys back from injury within the next couple of weeks. Potentially some of them are going to be at full strength by this Sunday. And so, not to mention, how often are you going to go up against Jaylen Waddle and Tyreek Hill, you know? So that's really all I have to say about it. You know, and the only other thing is just, you know, it was an extraordinary day for the offense, and it's probably one of the most extraordinary days for the Ravens offense I can remember, which we'll never actually remember because of the way that the game ended. So I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Yeah, that's fair. I think most of the Ravens offense had positive takeaways, and obviously defense was the primary issue in this game. I do think that there was one particular issue I saw in the Ravens offense that, again, would probably be getting taken care of once Dobbins is back. But you guys didn't look good third or fourth and short.
No.
In play calling at all, because you tried running Lamar most of the times, and the Dolphins were able to clue in on that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, just a combination of better execution on third and fourth and short, which was honestly kind of a theme throughout the weekend across the league. There were a lot of fourth and short yardage situations that ultimately did not get converted. And like, when those fourth and shorts and fourth and goals don't get converted, especially like, you know, toward the goal line, like that can really change the outcome of games. Like it has a noticeable impact on the score, obviously, because it's no points as opposed to 3 or 7. But just, yeah, I mean, in today's NFL of going for it more aggressively on fourth down, I think, ironically, teams have ended up leaving a lot more points out there. And that the final scores of these games may not actually be reflective of just how prolific these offenses actually are. But anyway, moving on to the next game. The Jets at the Browns. Well, that was something.
Yeah, it really was something. It's not often where a running back gets three touchdowns and still his team loses the game.
That was pretty unfortunate. Yeah. Like I would not want to be Nick Chubb during the closing moments of that game, having done all of that work all for naught. But great performance by Flacco. I mean, you know, you had to be happy about that if you were a Jets fan. You know, Joe still got it, man. You know, on any given day, if the protection is good, he can go off. It's just so often that the protection is not good. And if it is but slightly porous, you will see his age very, very quickly.
Yeah, I think we hammered this point enough in this episode, even in the last episode. Boy, we know Flacco's not getting protected as he should, but he's also very old, and he's clearly not the guy that they want to be there. But one guy that is there that should be in the future a major piece, Garrett Wilson, looked amazing. He got touchdowns and 100 receiving yards.
Absolutely.
He sliced through the Browns. And I thought this Browns secondary would be better. But at least the Jets are finding pieces for their rebuild moving forward. Next game we have up is Commanders at Lions, which was a game of two halves. Many games are games of two halves, but this one in particular. The Lions had a 22-0 shutout in the first half. I didn't think I would be saying Lions shutout in a long time.
Yes. Or at least not the Lions on the winning end of said shutout.
There you go.
Yes. But hey, man, that's what happens when you take your kneecap soup every day. We're averaging 35 points a game here, man. This is the kneecap soup starting to work through their systems. It's happening.
They are the only team to score 35 or more in both of their games so far.
Isn't that amazing?
It really is.
Yeah. And like, you know, again, it goes back to our opening discussion. Like, Curtis Samuel, Terry McLaurin, they've got some other dudes.
Jahan Dotson is one of the other receivers.
Yes.
Logan Thomas and Antonio Gibson. Yeah.
Realistically, how many great corners do the Lions have to combat that? I would argue not enough.
They have one guy who's, like, decent and one guy who's decent, you know, and right. That's not the formula when you're facing the Commanders.
Yeah, but like, you know, I've got to give the Lions offense credit. Their offense is fantastic. I mean, it is fantastic. They can hit the big play. They can drive down the field methodically. They also displayed some trickery in that game, which I thought was really encouraging from you know, Dan Campbell's squad. Commanders fought to the end. They're tough. Carson Wentz is gritty. He always has been. He never gives up. But at the end of the day, I think the
plays more than not. But in this game, Carson Wentz under pressure looked pretty good, I'd say.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And like he's had a good start to the year. You know, like I think too often we don't talk about the quarterbacks who lose. Like you can play great in defeat. We saw that a lot this weekend. Tip my cap to the Lions. They were the better team on Sunday, and they deserved to win the game.
Oh, for sure they were the better team. But it didn't help that Washington's offensive line looked truly putrid. I mean, Aiden Hutchinson, their second overall pick for the Lions, is going to be something special. He had three sacks and two tackles for loss separately. But, you know, that O-line should not be giving up six sacks. That's just not good.
Yeah.
And maybe this team will look better on the defensive side once Chase Young is back. He's on the pup list. But for now, clearly Washington has a lot of things to figure out, even though they have at least the passing game figured out.
Yeah, absolutely. Colts at Jags. Wow. I found myself saying wow a lot this weekend. I'm not going to lie. Like the word wow was a very common common refrain coming out of Sunday's games.
You're doing an impeccable Owen Wilson impression thus far.
Wow.
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 That definitely made me feel wow when the Colts got shut out by the Jaguars. Clearly something's wrong in Indianapolis. And it's not even just this matchup because, you know, they tied against the Texans, and that was with their top two receivers. But clearly the Matt Ryan transition has been nothing what I anticipated. I thought it would look good. And I think, it, you know, offensive line, the Colts line is not playing up to its talent.
I'll say this. The Colts struggle mightily with their division. I mean, they play some of their worst games against the Texans, Jags, and Titans. We all know they play terribly against the Jags. I mean, I almost give them a pass on that because there is clearly a schematic mismatch or some coaching deficiency or coaching advantage which the Jags have over them, because there's simply no other explanation for why they dominate them year after year. You know, after a while, it is no longer a coincidence. I'm sorry. As far as Matt Ryan goes, I mean, we knew that he was getting older. He's probably not the same player he once was. He's probably actively declining. But at the same time, like, I would like to see them against a team that's, I don't know, not in their division. They open against Houston, tie. Houston has always played them well. They draw the Jags in week two. The Jags have always played them very well. So, like, I almost wonder if this is a deceptive 0-2. If this is a deceptive 0-1-1.
Yeah. I don't want to dig much further into it, though.
Bucks probably not.
Saints. Bucks and Saints. Mm. For the second week in a row, the Buccaneers allowed a field goal on opening drive, and then it was intense defense for much of the game afterwards. The Saints did get another touchdown to Michael Thomas, who, by the way, is back. Michael Thomas is the guy who he's getting paid to be. It's just going to be tougher considering this team is not as well running as it was under Drew Brees.
Yeah.
And this Buccaneers defense is still here. And Jameis Winston, you know, he looked better for the past, let's say, year and change with pressure. But in this game, the Bucs really got to him and he was very sloppy. Just in a way, back to his form as well.
Remind me, Alex, did Jameis Winston get LASIK surgery a couple of seasons ago?
He did.
Did it look like that LASIK surgery was living up to snuff during that game on Sunday?
You know, I don't think it lived up to snuff, but LASIK isn't going to do anything to fix your fight or flight response. It's, in fact, only for vision.
Yeah. Honestly, like, interceptions, I've always believed, are more a function of judgment and timing than they are, like, actual, like, accuracy and your ability to see. But, like, there are some quarterbacks who throw interceptions, and then there are some quarterbacks who throw horrific interceptions. Jameis Winston is very much in the camp of a thrower of horrific interceptions. I mean, I don't know what he saw on some of those throws. I'm sure he's a very fun dude. I'm sure he's a great person to, like, meet and, like, you know, have a couple of beers with. But my goodness, he was just flinging it all over the field like there were no consequences whatsoever. And in my humble estimation, not to mention the Bucs literally had a 4th-and-1 toward the goal line and got stuffed. Another such instance of this happening in week two. So you could argue the score should have been even worse. And even more lopsided in favor of Tampa. But, man, I thought Jameis
cancels it out. The pick six cancels it out.
I thought Jameis really, really kind of put his team in some bad spots here.
Yeah, it definitely didn't look good. On the other side of the ball on offense, we were talking about concerns for the Tampa O-line for the past few weeks, and it looked fine, you know. The Saints' defense is pretty good, but they hardly pressured Brady significantly. They got one sack on him for 2 yards lost, and he did fumble once, but clearly they were letting him stand and think about his passes, and considering that they were missing many of their their receivers, and it was pretty much only the Mike Evans show, and then till the fourth quarter when he decided to get himself ejected, It just wasn't. It was a very bleh game for the Buccaneers. I'm not high on their offense, but it's doing the job. It's the defense that's going to win them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, couldn't agree more. Panthers at Giants. Brian Daboll and Danny Dimes are 2-0. Alex, can you believe it?
I can't. I liked what they did to some degree, but I cannot believe them being 2-0. It's who you draw. To be fair, I remember, weren't the Panthers 3-0 at one point, like a season or two ago, or the Broncos were 3-0. The Broncos were like 3-0 last year. And
right.
It's because of their matchups. And this is largely what it is. The Titans' performance, the win over the Titans was more impressive than this one. The Panthers shot themselves in the foot over and over again.
Yeah. Do you happen to remember who the Broncos of last year drew in week 4 to end their undefeated streak from King?
Was it the Ravens?
It was the Ravens in Denver to the tune of what should have been 30-7. But, of course, the refs decided to take away a Mark Andrews touchdown because he wasn't on their fantasy team late in the game. And they only ended up winning 23-7. But
you don't need to hold on to this one that much, man.
I was actually on a plane during that game, so I did not get to see the ending. Definitely a great start for the Giants. And also, like, a great morale boost for the Giants, just to begin your season with 2 W's gives them a nice cushion, as they start to get into September and October, later into the year. Just a team that's been so moribund for so long. And like, it's really exciting and encouraging to see them start to find their step again. So.
Man, if only I could say any of those things about the Panthers. Patriots at Steelers. This was a disgusting game.
This was a disgusting game. This game literally felt like you hella dropped two teams from the 1970s into 2022.
Yes, that would make sense. But the Patriots won. I suppose that's all that matters. Trubisky, he had one win against the Bengals, and clearly that doesn't mean that much today. But they just have to move on from him. They have to get the Kenny Pickett show going. They should focus on the future. As long as he won't die behind that offensive line, they should put Kenny Pickett out there, I'd say.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I don't know what they're waiting for. I mean, Trubisky is just awful. He's immeasurably awful as a quarterback. I mean, the Patriots were killing them. They were killing them in this game. I mean, thank goodness for a late score to make the score appear competitive, but I mean, like, what are you waiting for? What are you expecting to see here from Trubisky that we have not already seen up to this point in his career? He's not going to become a magical quarterback, overnight. He's not going to change into anything other than what he is currently, which is a terrible quarterback.
That terrible quarterback took my team to the playoffs twice, so that's maybe he's not that terrible.
To be fair, your team was 8-8 one of those years.
They were 8-8 that year. But yeah, not much else to be said. I just don't think there's a Thursday night game. They are gonna. I think they're gonna lose again, but we'll discuss that I guess a bit more later. And. Maybe Kenny Pickett will start week 4. Why? Because there's no need to rush him for Thursday night football.
Falcons at Rams. My beloved Rams. My back pocket backup team Rams. My, are they sloppy. They are unbelievably sloppy. They have adopted Matt Stafford's sloppiness as their own, to the point where Matt Stafford is now no longer the only one who serially turns the ball over. Now we've got running backs fumbling. We've got receivers dropping easy passes for interceptions. We've got wide receivers coughing up the ball as they're going to the ground. It's just an unbelievably sloppy team. And it just does not give me much confidence going into the season. I'm sorry, it doesn't.
It really doesn't. I think that they could still, win their division considering that the Cardinals are what they are, and the 49ers. 49ers are good, but, you know, we know that they're a little capped in their potential. So it'll be very interesting to see how the NFC West plays out. But, yeah, this just wasn't a good game at all. If only Jalen Ramsey didn't have to appear for one play to just moss. I don't even know who the receiver was, but he just straight up caught the ball on top of him and prevented the reverse 28-3 for the Falcons. I will say that the Falcons have been fighting these first few weeks impressively. Drake London has been a wonderful receiver thus far. But I think this all, I'm just so surprised that as well as they've been doing, Kyle Pitts has seemed pretty non-existent in the offense. Mm. And I would imagine, you know, that Marcus Mariota would throw to a tight end a lot more. But it's the way they play him. They still run him out, put him outside more times than not. And I think that they should use him more like a traditional tight end. And I think they'd reap some positive benefits based on the way they play him if they did that.
Yeah. But
overall, Mariota has been pretty sound in the pocket when he's not pressured. And I know that the Rams with Aaron Donald and others have been able to put plenty of pressure in this game, but it wasn't enough to protect the lead permanently, even against a team that's second receiver is maybe Olamide Zaccheaus or Cordero Hodge. It's not a great core, to say the least, but they still almost caught up and tied the game, maybe almost won the game.
Yeah, I just want to say Jalen Ramsey ended that man's career on that play. That was some high-key clownage which happened on that final play there. The Falcons are feisty, man. They've got that dog in them. They haven't converted it to a win yet, but you know, they're just contrary enough with Mariota. Their offense is just difficult enough to prepare for. You know, like they run that, you know, classic, you know, option system, which, you know, with Mariota's legs, it honestly moves the ball pretty effectively. It's just not always reliable in third and long when you need it to be, which is why they've found themselves in these deficits these first 2 weeks. But
before the season started, the Falcons are this year's Lions. This feels more true now than it did then.
I'd be more inclined to agree if I believed in the quarterback.
You believe in Jared Goff?
I believe in him more than Mariota. I'm sorry, I do. I mean, I watched Jared Goff get to a Super Bowl, and I watched him be competitive in the playoffs in multiple other years. I have never seen Mariota do anything of the sort.
Fair enough.
But I do hear where you're coming from. They are feisty. They don't quit. They clearly play hard for their coach. And one of these days, they are going to complete the comeback. So, you know, will it be
– they even win a game and get a lead up front?
Will they be – will it be in week three or will it be beyond week three? Who knows? We'll have to see.
Yeah, I guess that's the question. All right, Seahawks and 49ers. Mm. I don't think there's anything to discuss from this game because of how thoroughly pummeled the Seahawks were, besides the fact that obviously Trey Lance got a season-ending injury. So now the 49ers are fully committed to the Jimmy G show. So in a sense, that might be good for chemistry. And we know that he can complete pretty much all the passes that are needed. But he's just not – no thrills, nothing spectacular. Trey Lance was always about the ceiling, but now that's going to get delayed at least a year, if not multiple years, if he doesn't come back well from the injury.
Yeah, just really unfortunate for him. And, you know, you always hate to see a guy get hurt, especially a guy who's worked so hard and has such a promising future, which I do believe he has. I think folks are forgetting just how inexperienced he is and how few reps the man has had to this point in his career. I mean, it could literally just be a matter of time with him. He could, you know, a season or two from now, you know, he could be great. You know, we just don't really know because he just doesn't have a big body of work. But now, very unfortunately, that's been set back, you know, by another year. But, you know, in the meantime, if you're the Niners, I think you got better on Sunday. I think your team got better over the course of one Sunday afternoon, and I think they got several wins better. Because, you know, we all know Jimmy can stand in the pocket and make the throws. He can distribute it all over the field. And, you know, to your chemistry point, which I think is a great one, he's got, you know, he knows these guys. He's played with them for several off seasons. It was clear they had the chemistry advantage on Sunday. And I think they're going to win more games now than they were going to win before. I really do. And that doesn't help Trey Lance develop, and it's really unfortunate for him. But I do think the Niners, at the end of the day, are going to win more games this year now that Jimmy is out there than if Trey was out there.
Yeah. It's always an interesting question how much you have to focus on your year now versus your future.
Absolutely.
I think they were obviously betting on Trey being able to get through the learning curve quickly enough this year that they still make the playoffs because of how good their team is overall, and then he's ready for the playoffs. But overall, this is probably better for making the playoffs with certainty, but it's still going to be interesting to see how it actually shakes out.
Totally. Bengals at Cowboys. I could probably count on my hand, or count on one hand, the number of times that I have rooted so hard for the Cowboys in my life. And this was undeniably one of those times. Them boys made me so proud, from King. Them boys made me so, so proud on Sunday. I could not have been any prouder of them boys, man. I couldn't have been prouder of them.
Yes, they are going to continue. They are very integral to your Ravens still leading the AFC North.
They really are. And, like, they really bailed out the Ravens, too, because, like, that was the game the Ravens really should have won. And, like, you know, the Bengals losing and falling to 0-2 was really just a very nice consolation prize that I'm not sure the Ravens deserved, much less anyone else in the division. But, like, the Bengals have real concerns, man. I mean, they brought in three offensive linemen, and, like, they're not working. I mean, maybe it's simply a timing thing. And, like, with Burrow having his surgery during the offseason and not playing much in the preseason, maybe it's just one of those things that's going to take a while to bake. But at the same time, like, is it time to start being concerned if you're a Bengals fan?
I definitely think that we should pump the brakes on, you know, Joe Burrow already being in a terrible situation. I was talking to people that they're always like, you know, he's pretty much Andrew Luck in his situation right now. And I don't know. I just think that the offensive line is just very heavily based on guys playing together and knowing how they work as a unit. And with the fact that they have four new starters compared to their playoff run, it just takes time for all these guys to work together. And yeah. Joe Burrow, in fact, didn't play snaps for them in the preseason either. So even if they had some chemistry, it wasn't with their star QB, Joe Cool. So I think we just have to wait it out, because even if they have a bad O-line, guess what? They made the Super Bowl with a bad O-line. You know, like, it's just a different bad O-line that Joe Cool needs to get comfortable with and know the intricacies of it. But it was very fortunate for you, and it was very fortunate for the Dallas Cowboys so that they can think that they have a chance of winning their division. But Cooper Rush isn't anything special. He seems to have good chemistry with Noah Brown, which is worthy of noting for, like, fantasy purposes particularly, and the fact that the show doesn't have to be exclusively CeeDee Lamb and, you know, maybe Dalton Schultz. So that's a positive to take away. And then Michael Gallup comes back, and maybe that O-line gels more. So things, you know, it's definitely great for their culture that they got this win here.
But, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and, like, you know, Michael Gallup coming back, had Dak still been out there, would have been, I think, a really nice catalyst for the team. But, of course, I kind of have to think that for the remainder of the time that Dak is not out there, any win for the Cowboys is miraculous. I'm sorry, but most backup quarterbacks stink. It's just a fact of life. But at the same time, like, Noah Brown can be a great three. I think once Michael Gallup does come back and once Dak eventually rejoins the fold, you know, Noah Brown is a fantastic three. And that's, you know, that's a really encouraging development for them. And I'm inclined to agree with you on the Bengals. I think I sometimes forget they have four new starters on that O-line. And, like, you know, we all know Joe Burrow's the real deal. I mean, he didn't just not become the real deal in one off season because they lost. You know, he's still an unbelievable quarterback. They still have unbelievable weapons. Ja'Marr Chase clowned dudes on Sunday. He straight clowned them, as he always does, seemingly in critical spots. He loves to clown them when it matters most. And so, you know, I think that all bodes well for the Bengals.
T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, Hayden Hurst, former Baltimore Raven tight end, succeeding elsewhere.
How do they get Hayden Hurst, man? How did they get Hurst, honestly?
Step one, you guys let go of him. He goes to a team. Step two, that team lets go of him. Therefore, Cincinnati Bengals can sign him.
Imagine letting go of Darren Waller and Hayden Hurst, and yet you still have Mark Andrews.
Indeed. It's a good group there. You guys really know your tight ends, and who knows, maybe Isaiah Likely is the next that's going to leave the Baltimore Ravens to be a stud elsewhere.
Hey, all you fantasy and or prediction strike investors out there, Isaiah Likely, that's the guy. That's the guy you should be looking at. Just saying.
That is a guy worth looking at. Yeah, moving on, though. Texans at Broncos.
Mm.
Boy, Danger Russ is not looking very dangerous right now.
But is it his fault, though?
I mean, week one, I would say generally not. But week two brings serious questions.
Yeah. Yeah, I find it interesting that Russ can seemingly move it so well within the 20s, but once he gets inside the red zone, he and his offense really stymie. I think they have the worst red zone conversion percentage in the league right now. And I think Russ has a decision to make. I think he needs to decide if he's going to put this team on his back and do what it takes to score when they're inside the 20, or if he's going to refuse to use all of the tools available to him and insist on being a fully pocket quarterback, which has never really been the impetus for his success. I think he's a great thrower from the pocket, but I believe he's at his best when he can mix in some well-timed running with that. And his refusal to run inside the red zone this year has been curious. He's unquestionably gotten a bit bigger this offseason. And, you know, it almost makes you wonder if, you know, he intends to do less running, and which makes me wonder in turn, if he's going to do less running, is he going to be as productive? And I'm not so sure if I have the answer to that question right now.
Yeah, I definitely think his threat as a runner definitely played into part of his success as a passer. But we have to remember, new system, he's still working through jitters. Developing chemistry, and you know, Nathaniel Hackett's a first-time coach. There's a lot here to work on and improve, and they have a lot of personnel that once it gels should be a good unit. So I'm not too worried, but I'm definitely, if I have like options in this, I'm trying to stay away to see the actual finalization of that success.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is very much a convergence of many things, and we should give it time to bake before drawing any conclusions. But I will say this, though. Nathaniel Hackett, I did not expect him to appear this over his head at the whole head coaching thing. He looks to be lost at times. To his credit, he admits the wronghood of his decision seemingly at every press conference, but my goodness, I mean, do they burn through their timeouts, man? They burn through those timeouts fast.
They burn through those play clocks, too.
And those play clocks, yes. Moving on to the Cardinals at the Raiders. You know what I'm going to say, Frumkin. It's three letters long.
Just say it.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow, wow. Raiders blow big lead.
They were 22-0 from into the fourth quarter to the end of overtime.
The Raiders were dominating this game, dude. They were dominating the Cardinals in that first half and into the second half.
Yes.
But then they just stopped. It's almost like the Cardinals siphoned all of the momentum away from the Raiders, and then suddenly they had all of the juice. Because then Kyler Murray just started making plays that only Kyler Murray can make. I mean, he was scrambling around. I think he scrambled 84 yards on that two-point conversion play in total. I think he scrambled a total of 84 yards while he was running around.
Is that an official stat? Because I'd believe it if it was.
No, like I believe that's the official stat. I think he literally ran for 84 yards on that play.
I personally think that's a deeper indignation against the Raiders, though. Like, they definitely let things fall apart when they should have been able to get some defender onto Kyler at that point.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, the culpability falls on both teams. But the Cardinals, man, they found it. They found what they had been missing for an entire half of football. Any semblance of life whatsoever. They were lifeless. And then they found the life.
Yeah, I agree. They definitely just evaporated from the face of the earth at the end of the season last year and looked awful week one against the Chiefs. This is definitely good for them. But, you know, you just kind of have to hope that they can harness that and just keep moving forward. And then after another few more weeks, DeAndre Hopkins comes back in the mix, and that's a game changer. So, yeah, you're just hoping that everything works out at the end of the day. Moving on to Bears at Packers.
Juicy.
No. I will dismiss that immediately. It was not a game that was ever meant to be juicy. And I was not surprised, except for the fact that the Bears looked good on the opening part of this game. And I was really hoping that we could take that moving forward into the game. But we got shut down pretty quickly for the most part. The Bears have a lot to work on, to say the least. I think a lot of it stems from the offensive line, particularly in pass blocking. But we only threw the ball 11 times. Imagine being down by multiple scores and only throwing 11 times. We threw more during a monsoon.
Honestly, I wonder if that was more of a business decision to protect Justin Fields at that point.
Well, I think a lot of it was protecting Justin Fields, but also the Bears ran very few plays. We only had 41 offensive snaps.
That's a really low number, dude.
It's god awful.
That's an uncommonly low number. Like even if you're a bad team, that's an uncommonly low number.
Yeah, 41 offensive snaps, 20 designed runs, 21 designed passes. So 50% of designed pass plays ended in a pass attempt.
Oh, so the others were just like scrambles by Fields?
Yes.
Oh, dang. Yeah. Honestly, like, just another game where the Bears had fourth and goal deep in Packers territory and could not convert. And if they did convert and get the touchdown, it's 24-17 in the closing minutes.
I mean, sure. And if it's 24-17, you convert, then you go for an onside kick. And then if you get the luck that the Jets got, that ball goes back to you, and maybe you have the momentum, and then you maybe score again, and then you go for a two-point. There's so many ifs there. Let's just shut up and accept that the Bears are garbage.
But at that point, did you even need to onside kick if you were the Bears?
I mean, do you trust your defense enough, I guess? I mean, I don't know how much time on the clock was left. Maybe.
Oh, I'd trust my defense more than I would trust recovering the onside kick.
I mean, if there probably was enough time to trust the defense there. But yeah. In either case, that's a lot of ifs. The Bears have some potential, but this passing offense is screwed up horrifically. We have thrown the ball 29 times total over two games. More QBs threw 30 in a single game than not, I'm pretty sure. Like, yeah. our two games combined is less than the median pass attempt in the NFL this season. That's atrocious.
Yeah, Lamar threw for 29 alone on Sunday.
And that's low, considering that, like, Carson Wentz has thrown for 46 this past game.
Yeah.
And Matt Ryan threw for 50 week one, you know?
I mean, yeah.
It's a passing league. The Bears are just playing like Mike Ditka is still coaching us.
That said, I don't that said, I don't know. Sorry. I don't know if you should strive to pass it 50 times. I don't know if that should be what you go into the game looking to do. But at the same time, like, I do think, you know, anywhere between 25 to 35 is probably a good number. And the Bears, you know, they know they've got offensive line woes, and they're trying to protect their young asset. And my gosh, I mean, every game Justin Fields makes plays. I mean, he made plays on Sunday night. He's just not getting the protection that he needs to consistently make the plays. And
I agree.
Yeah.
But there's still this game in particular, I mean, it's one game, but there were definitely some questionable decision makings. There were high highs with potential, but definitely low lows. And protection would definitely alleviate some of the problems. But
yeah,
he just doesn't seem to be seeing the flats in the middle of the field very well.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Because
he's only making plays on deep shots right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am looking forward to us having a very high pick and us executing very well on it. But for now, I'm not going to be a very big – I'm a fan no matter what, but it is what it is. Moving on to Titans at Bills. It was a very simple game, I would say.
Yes, simple is one word for it. Gosh, dude, that was an awful showing by the Titans. That was just awful. I mean, the Bills, I don't believe the Bills are that good. I mean, I do think they're very, very good. They might be the best team in the league, but they're not that good. I'm sorry, they're not.
Well, after doing what they did to the Rams and what they did to the Titans, maybe they are that good.
I mean, if they keep doing it, then maybe I'll have to, like, reassess. But, I mean, the Titans were just awful. I mean, they were unwatchably bad. I mean, the Rams, like, there were moments when the Rams were, like, moving the ball on them, you know? And, like, they were driving the length of the field before Matt Stafford gave the ball away to them three times, you know? This didn't feel competitive. This felt like just the Titans were just rolling over like a two quarters in.
Yeah, sure. I think at the end of the day, the Bills have had some good matchups in their favor, and this Titans team does not look prepared to handle any pressure whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah, none at all. Just really, really an abhorrent mismatch, if ever we saw one in week two. Absolutely abhorrent. Not much else to say there. Vikings at Eagles. My, do the Eagles look good on both sides of the football.
Bet they do.
They might be the best team in the NFC, dude. I'm serious.
I think that's a bit of a reach, but at the same time, I feel like so many top teams in the NFC regressed. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, Cowboys, Packers.
Cowboys are worse, Packers are worse, Bucks are worse, Rams are worse. Those are all four division winners. All four division winners are worse.
49ers were on pace to be worse, but now that due to some unfortunate injury luck, they are actually strangely fortunate, if that makes sense.
It does make sense because it's the very rare dilemma where losing your starter makes you a better team.
Yes, yes. Very, very unusual situation. But anyway... Yeah, I think the Eagles have improved from where they were last year. I think they're better now than they were at the end of last year. The roster is obviously much better. It was already good. Now it's really good. And, you know.
Imagine if the team we were discussing in our last game, the Titans, just decided to keep A.J. Brown. You know, maybe they would look like a good football team out there.
The Titans are the linchpin for the entire NFL standings this year. By giving up A.J. Brown, they have disrupted the competitive landscape of the league.
That they have. They just didn't want to pay that. I mean, Treylon Burks looks good, but it's not AJ Brown.
Who yeah.
looked fine this game. He didn't look wonderful. Devonta Smith looked really good because they finally started throwing the ball to him. Because this Eagles team is so good. And I definitely, it was a question of whether it clicked. And it very much clicked right away with AJ Brown and Jalen Hurts suddenly looking like the clear guy. There were points, like last season even, where they were considering benching him for Gardner Minshew. And
yeah. You know,
Minshew magic might have been a thing very briefly, but clearly Jalen Hurts is much, much better than that.
Yeah, the Eagles are employing the same style of offense the Ravens used with Lamar during his first two seasons, and it's worked wonders for them. I mean, they're leaning into his strengths and they're leaning into them so well, and it's producing remarkable results on the field for them. So, you know, you have to give him credit.
Nick Sirianni wins Coach of the Year.
What was that?
My hot take is Nick Sirianni wins Coach of the Year.
I don't think that's a hot take at all, dude.
I don't think it's a hot take at all, but I think it's like a little early to say. He's my favorite to win Coach of the Year right now.
I mean, he's got them in incredible shape. They're the only team. That's not true. They technically only scored 24 points, although they moved the ball enough that they could have scored a lot more points.
Yeah, they definitely pumped off the gas a bit.
Yeah. There's like, I feel like there's always those games where the score is much lower than what the team actually could have produced if they were in aggressive mode. You know, like you'll see a domineering victory and the team will score 24 points.
Yeah, I mean, all 24 of those points were in the first half. Clearly they could have scored more.
Yeah.
Vikings didn't figure them out because the Vikings scored 7 points total.
Yeah, they scored 7 points total. And like, I don't fault Kirk Cousins for some of those interceptions. I mean, you know, when you're down 24-7 late in the game, you kind of have to make something happen. We've all played Madden. We've all been there. You're down by three touchdowns and you literally need to just get something going. And so you have to take chances. I mean, two of his last three picks, I think, came on third down. One was obviously in the red zone, which was particularly excruciating. But there was another one downfield, which he kind of just tossed up, and unfortunately it found the wrong team. And so, you know, I don't take much away from this with respect to the Vikings. I think the Vikings were, how do I put this? I think the Vikings were feeling themselves a little bit after the Green Bay win. I still think they're a very good team on both sides of the ball. They can be had on defense, but at the same time, that offense is extremely hard to prepare for. I mean, I know this because I watched the Ravens run it for multiple seasons when Lamar was first starting out. It's incredibly difficult for defenses to prepare for in 4 days. And, you know, that I think really played into their favor. And I think as this Eagles offense faces more and more teams, particularly within the NFC, I think the NFC will start to figure it out more than the AFC will, simply because they won't see them as often. Not saying that the Eagles are going to be figured out, just saying that the first time you face it, it's got to be very discombobulating. And so in that regard, I give the Vikings a bit of a pass.
I will give them a bit of a pass too, because the way the NFL is structured, as long as you have an extremely potent offense, that can be enough to win most games.
Right.
And the Vikings do have that on paper. And Kirk Cousins looked really good out of the gates. It's just that under those bright lights, you know, he doesn't play his best, it seems. And his numbers maybe are overplayed a bit, but he's 2-10 for Monday Night Football now. That's not good.
Yeah.
Fortunately, the Super Bowl's never played on Monday.
Right. Fortunately, yeah. I'm telling you, man, the schedule makers don't like him. They don't like Kirk Cousins. It's so simple, guys. Just backload all of his primetime games so that he can be flexed out of all of them when the time comes. And he literally never has to play a game past 4:30 p.m. until the Super Bowl.
You know how I'd react if I saw that that's what the schedule makers made?
How would you react?
Three letters. Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, this game wasn't very WoW-worthy, but overall, the Week 2 slate was. So that's been it for Hitch Route. Catch us for our Week 3 predictions episode next.
Mm. It's going to be juicy.
Maybe it actually will be, unlike Bears-Packers.
Next time, though.
All right, peace.
We'll see you guys.